Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
When all this smoking ban nonsense started 2 decades ago, because I remember it was, I think it was actually our second episode, or maybe it was our first episode. Yeah, I think it was actually our first episode. The first episode we ever did of Free Talk Live back in 2002, when we were just a local show in Florida at the time, was about a smoking ban that was proposed on the ballot down there in Florida. It was to ban smoking from all public businesses. Basically, any business that was open to the public would not be allowed to have smoking.
I remember that ban. I was angry.
Frustrating. Yeah. And of course, they voted in favor of it overwhelmingly. It was like 70%. Voted in favor of that. So, you know, the writing was on the wall at that time. You knew that it was going to get worse because government programs don't just stop where they start. There's an idea that comes out and then it metastasizes. It gets worse. It grows into areas that it never was originally intended to grow into. But if they can ban smoking in a business, then they can ban smoking on a public conveyance. Then they can ban smoking outdoors. They can ban smoking in your car. And now they're going to try to ban smoking inside your, what you thought was, your private home.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's what's coming next.
It even went back even further than that. I don't know exactly when they banned it in planes, but...
Yeah, that was a while back.
Yeah.
Suffolk County is proposing a law that would snuff out secondhand smoke in apartment complexes, condominiums, and multifamily dwellings. Haven't they already done this in California and some towns, some cities in California? This sounds familiar to me. I feel like this is maybe not the first time this particular thing has either been proposed. Surely it's been proposed previously in other places, but I almost feel like this may not be the first place where this would exist.
Is New York the worst in terms of freedom, in terms of the 50?
New York is the worst, but California, I believe, is the second worst.
Okay, but there's a huge margin between California
last
and New York?
I looked, there was, okay. Yeah. So
shouldn't be a surprise to anybody then.
No.
Home of Trump and Bloomberg. What a coincidence.
Smoking is already banned in many public places, near schools and office buildings, but there are no smoke-free laws for apartment buildings, condos, two-family homes. It's according to Suffolk legislator Dr. He's a doctor, so, you know, you should take him seriously. Dr. William Spencer said, quote, "Let me be clear. Any legislation that there is a vote required that would have an impact on preventing the public or innocent people who have made a choice not to smoke from being exposed to smoke, I will support that legislation," he said. He, who is also a medical doctor, said secondhand smoke can permeate through cracks in walls, electrical lines, plumbing, and ventilation systems.
I don't think Suffolk County is that populous. We could look it up, but I mean, there's only one New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, is it part of the county? Is New York City part of that county or is it not?
I don't think that's the New York City part. Oh, it's Long Island. Okay, that is a fairly highly populated place.
It's highly populated, but it's spread out.
I guess. I mean, I've been to Long Island before. There's a lot of people that live there. But either way, you know, they're talking about banning smoking from these people's homes. And the claim is that there are people who've died from secondhand smoke. We called those claims into question in the last segment. You're welcome to join the conversation here. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. Legislator Sam Gonzalez, there's actually two laws that are proposed to reduce secondhand smoke. He is sponsoring the bill that bans all smoking in apartments, condos, and multifamily homes. When asked if the proposed legislation is going too far, Gonzalez said, quote, "It's not going too far. We're heading in that direction anyway. We can't smoke in restaurants. We can't smoke in buildings. We can't smoke inside theaters. There are parks. There are beaches that you can't smoke in. We are headed there." The proposed legislation has Suffolk residents buzzing. One person said, quote, "It's impossible to enforce." I disagree. This is quite possible to enforce, and all it will require is a busybody neighbor to snitch you out. All that's going to require is somebody to call the police and say, "I can smell smoke coming through my wall. I think my neighbor's smoking." And the cops are going to show up, and the cops are going to knock on that person's door. And most people, not knowing their rights, are going to open the door. And then the cops are going to, "We smell smoke inside this apartment. We're coming in." And then they're going to arrest you.
It's, you know,
or ticket you.
It's, as far as passive, you know, you're probably right as far as, like, or as far as passive, you know, enforcement. But as far as active enforcement, I think they're, you know, this person is right. Is writing the story, I guess.
What do you mean by active enforcement? Like, are you saying the cops aren't going to go door to door with a dog or something like that?
It seems like it would be an awful lot of energy on the. I mean, I don't know what is this, like a ticket of some kind?
Well, I don't have the law in front of me, but it does say they could be fined up to $1,000 or possibly arrested, and it will be complaint driven. So
okay,
they're not going to walk around, you know, searching through apartment buildings to find which doors smell like smoke.
Yet.
But if...
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yet. But if someone calls them, they're going to come out.
Yeah.
The CBS News talking to folks who live there in Suffolk County, one person said, quote, "If they want to smoke in their apartment, I think it's totally fine. You should have the discretion, obviously, to smoke on your own property," said another person. So they managed to find some New Yorkers who are actually, like, kind of willing to let their neighbors be and, you know, make their own decisions for themselves. However, when they spoke to the legislator who has proposed this, Sam Gonzalez, he says, quote, "When I get pushback from individuals that say, 'No, you can't stop me from smoking,' I say, 'Why not?'" And that's the attitude.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, well, he can.
Wow.
He's got a gang. He's got a criminal gang on his side. He's got men with guns who will do his bidding. And he absolutely can stop you from smoking with violence if necessary. If you don't do what he says, his gang will come and put you in handcuffs and then take you and put you into a cage. And it will be harder to get cigarettes in jails. Not impossible, but you know, they're a little more pricey. They have to go through a bit of a more smuggling kind of a process in order to get into jail.
You might have to revert to heroin or something like that.
Usually you're going to pay more for a house, right? Like if you rent your own house that's separated from other people.
I'm assuming if this wasn't a law, you would have the option then, right? So you could go to an apartment building and rent from an apartment building where they don't allow smoking.
Well, see, that's the real solution here, right? Is to allow the marketplace to provide places that don't allow smoking. And there must be these places, right? Like, I've never looked
This is already something that exists.
That's what I'm thinking. I've never looked at renting an apartment, but I presume there are smoke-free apartment complexes.
Oh, absolutely.
There must be.
There are. I know there are.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Most of them are.
I was going to say, like, that's what I'm thinking is, like, most of them probably are. Not the other way around.
Yeah, so
it's
what's the problem
probably
here?
Harder to find an apartment building where you can
that allows
smoke
for smoking.
Right, not. So... and that's just because of the wear and tear on the buildings and
sure.
the fact that a lot of people don't like to smoke, especially now we have a disproportionate like smoking than smoking. So
yeah, the wear and tear is awful. I mean, as somebody who's managed properties, yeah, I bought a house in Florida a long time ago that I ended up living in, but it was a smoker who'd lived there before me. Mm-hmm. And the amount of work that had to be done to sort of de-smokeize the place was just awful. Mm-hmm. And expensive and time-consuming.
Yep.
You know, everything's yellow. All the blinds and what was white paint on the walls. It's just this tar that's just everywhere.
I wanted to talk about coronavirus.
Okay,
which
sure.
is, of course, all in the news right now.
What's the latest on it? I have not been following it closely.
Well, the latest is that it's mostly in Asia. I guess is the short version of that. But I had a personal story that I just wanted to share with you from a close friend of mine in Seattle. And he happened to have been traveling in rural China kind of at the start of the outbreak.
Mm.
So when he came home, he ended up with some symptomatic issues. And he was concerned that he might have coronavirus. So he called his local hospital and, you know, said, "Hey, can I come in and get first of all, let me back up. He isolated himself in his own home.
Okay.
Called them and said, "I might have coronavirus. Can I get tested?" So they showed up in hazmat suits.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
And forcibly took him to the hospital. And I just wanted to read his little Facebook post.
Because that's so much easier than saying, "Sure,
right?
Come on in."
Right.
Yeah. hold on. When you say they showed up, who was it that was in the hazmat suits? Was it cops?
People in the ambulance?
The ambulance.
No,
workers.
They were
okay.
Not cops. They were medical people.
Unless it was a man with a gun telling him, "You must then it sounds kind of consensual to me. I mean,
I don't know.
Not having been there. So
here's the other thing. Like, I don't necessarily know, like if there was ever any justification for like doing something like this, this is probably it, right? Like,
you mean forcibly treating people?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a fan of forcibly treating people, but like,
Now, wait a minute. I mean, okay, I don't know if we can get a little personal here, but your partner went to the hospital this week.
Yeah.
Were there any weird things that transpired there? Was he forced to do things against his will? I mean, did you hear?
I mean, you go to the hospital here. I mean, the whole point of going to the hospital is that you want treatment. Right. If you call them up, I would expect them, you know, tell you, yeah, put a face mask on. Well, in this case, he went to the hospital. He was told, you know, put a face mask on, which kind of makes sense now, especially because of the coronavirus.
And you said a lot of people had masks on.
A lot of people had masks on. Anybody with any kind of fever or anything of that nature had a mask on. Mm-hmm. Their beds were full at the hospital. Now probably not because of the coronavirus, but because of the flu. So the beds were full.
Yeah, there haven't been very many coronavirus out, you know, any kind of indicators in the U.S.
But there's still protocol now to how to deal with this, and the protocol is effectively make sure everybody has a face mask on, and if they test, if they test positive. So first they test you for the flu.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
Last year, I remember the story that they were changing their name, so I had to go and check, like, why are they referring to them as the Boy Scouts if they're no longer the Boy Scouts? And it turns out Boy Scouts of America is the parent organization. They still have that same name. But the organization that changed names was the Boy Scouts. So I guess that's separate. So like the Boy Scouts of America have underneath their umbrella the Cub Scouts, the Boy Scouts, and there's some other really a Weeblo, I believe it is. The youngest group, I think, is what that is. I don't know. I was only a Boy Scout for like 2 weeks.
I think Weeblo is in the middle.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. I was never into it as a child, so I don't know at all. But so they changed the name of the Boy Scouts to Scouts BSA because last year they officially allowed girls to join the Boy Scouts. Mm. And so Boy Scouts of America is the parent organization. That's the one that is filing for bankruptcy. According to CNN, they filed for bankruptcy in Delaware bankruptcy court early Tuesday this week. The youth organization, which celebrated its 110th anniversary this year, listed liabilities of between $100 million and $500 million and estimated assets of $1 billion to $10 billion. Michael Pfau, a Seattle-based attorney whose firm represents 300 alleged victims across the country, said the bankruptcy claims process will be decidedly different for those who are suffering due to the Boy Scouts of America's alleged inaction. He said, quote, "They won't have to give depositions involving their life history. Their lives won't be scrutinized, but they lose the right to a jury trial. For a lot of abuse survivors, telling their story in a court of law and forcing the organizations to defend their actions can be cathartic. That won't happen with a bankruptcy hearing," said Pfau. Moniz said in the aftermath of the Lewis case, his office received hundreds of phone calls from adult males claiming to have been Boy Scouts of America sexual abuse victims. Now, of course, how do you really know?
Yeah.
This is one of the biggest, you know, problems with claims coming in later on. You know, now they're adults. It's been a decade, 2 decades. Somebody saw a headline showing a big payout, right? $18.5 million was the verdict in this one guy's case. There's a lot of people in the Scouts who, you know, maybe they're in a bad place in their life 10 or 20 years later, and they see a headline hit the newspapers, and they're like, you know, maybe I could make $10 million.
And you know what's you know what's even more kind of messed up is that it's like I understand that, you know, some kids could potentially have had traumatic experiences going through this. But really, $18 million, I mean, it just seems such an overreaction relative to
We don't know what that case was about. According to this story, even after the individual was found to have been, you know, a danger or whatever, mm-hmm. they still continued to allow him to volunteer for the scouts. So they like didn't even really cut off ties with the guy after that.
Yeah, that's real problematical. That's why the church gets into trouble too. I mean, these just it happening isn't as much of a huge liability issue because, employers normally are not liable for the criminal acts of their employees unless unless they're ordered to do it.
I don't know about that. I think you're...
So there were two cases here. One was an initial case where he got an initial verdict of $1.4 million. And then there was another case later with the $18.5 million. The guy who was the apparent abuser was alleged to, let's see here, that it said the abuse was severe and it was over a period of a number of years and it was to more than one individual. And that further, even after a complaint by...
So the 18 million was a set of plaintiffs, not a single
plaintiff?
That's
not clear. One of their attorneys estimates the number of claimants will eclipse those of the Catholic Church. He said, quote...
Holy moly.
I mean, that shouldn't be too surprising, though. I mean, this is an organization that takes kids in and goes on trips and things with them, like camping.
Well, I mean, the Catholic Church
has
kids, too.
It's hard to out-molest the Catholic Church.
Yeah. I mean, the Catholic Church is a global organization.
But, the Catholic Church doesn't take kids on trips, do they?
I mean, I'm sure there are things like that.
They have schools. Yeah. They have orphanages.
But a school situation is very different than, you know.
No, it's not. Still adults in authority over young people.
Yeah,
plenty of opportunities for abuse.
I guess you're
boarding
right.
Schools also, in some
it
cases.
It seems like
I
it would be more. I mean, going on a camping trip is more like having some kid in, you know, a bed with an adult. I mean, it's like the equivalent of that, you know.
Do they share tents?
I'm just a
scouting trip.
I don't know. I'm just assuming, I guess.
The Catholic bankruptcies are limited in geographic scope. Here, there will be claimants from all 50 states and the American territories, said the attorney. We can talk about files and numbers, but in reality, if you step back and realize the scope of the human carnage, it's stunning, he said. Reports of a bankruptcy filing had swirled as early as December of 2018 when the Wall Street Journal reported BSA Boy Scouts ad hired law firm Sidley Austin for possible Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing assistance, but no official filing happened until this week. For alleged victims, however, the organization's bankruptcy filing may represent another institution that failed to protect them and is avoiding taking responsibility for the abuse that happened under its watch. The attorney, one of them, said, "We need to make sure that we receive some accountability, and if bankruptcy court is how we have to do it, then so be it," he said. In an open letter to victims, the national chairman of the Boy Scouts of America, Jim Turley, wrote the organization entered into bankruptcy to make sure it's able to equitably compensate all the victims of abuse.
See, that was my point. If you that you don't, if you do want to be responsible and you do and you have that many plaintiffs, you don't want the first few
to get it all
plaintiffs to empty the whole bucket and then everybody else is toast because the money's gone.
He said the BSA cannot undo what happened to you, but we're committed to supporting you and to doing everything in our power to prevent it from happening to others. He wrote, the letter going on to say that the, quote, National Organization of the Boy Scouts of America has initiated a voluntary financial restructuring to ensure we can equitably compensate all victims of past abuse in our programs through a proposed victims compensation trust. I encourage you and all victims to come forward and file claims so you can receive compensation from this trust. We will provide clear notices about how to do so. I think that you're absolutely right about this, Nobody. That's what they were looking to do here. What if you can't even remember the Scoutmaster's name? What if it's just like, oh yeah, I definitely was touched by someone. I don't remember what his name was. I was in the Scouts between these years and this place. Will they pay you?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't be able to make a claim against the Scoutmaster.
Doesn't
that
matter,
way,
right?
But
you can make a claim against the organization.
You could make a claim against the organization. Yeah.
Yeah. And it sounds like they're just willing to pay out anybody who makes a claim at this point.
It is absolutely ridiculous. The lack of evidence in these cases. In other cases, you know, they probably have to present some evidence, but this is just basically he say versus she said, and not even that, because how does the Boy Scouts of America defend itself?
They can't.
They can't. They weren't there. They didn't. You know, they weren't really the people now. You know, aren't right. The people then are not involved now. Like,
they've got
they couldn't even have.
They've got a canned response. Yeah. We're sorry this happened to you. Here's some money.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what this has turned into. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, combine this with the whole Me Too culture thing that came out in the last couple of years, where you've got older folks, people in college or whatever,
yep,
who are deathly afraid of even going out on a date with somebody of their same age range because yeah, they're worried that they're going to be alleged to have committed some sort of a rape mm-hmm, claim against them because of that. You've got colleges now that are instructing their attendees to get ongoing consent.
What I hope the Me Too culture will do is encourage people to come forward immediately, not 20 years
later. I don't know if that's going to, you know, it's a good question of will that solve the problem unless they come forward immediately in that, like, you just were assaulted that you're going and you're getting, you know, taking the evidence, because then there's evidence, right? If it's really immediately. But the problem is, I think when you say immediately, I suspect it's probably going to be more like 3 or 4 days later or a week later or a month later, not, you know, 20 years later, but it's still, you know, it's still going to be
without
evidence.
Even then, it's a good thing, because if nothing else, there are witnesses who can say, oh, well, they were actually never alone that night.
Yeah,
I saw them. She was over there.
At least the person might have a chance at defending themselves,
or
because they have evidence that they were not with that person at the time.
Oh, I saw this person come out of a room and they looked distraught and I wondered why, and then this other person came out later. So sooner is always better. And the other thing is, sooner means you stop somebody from continuing to offend,
yeah.
You know.
And the BBC is reporting on sex dolls, and rather sex robots, saying that they may cause psychological damage. They say the technology, U.S. researchers have warned the availability of sex robots with artificial intelligence poses a growing psychological and moral threat to individuals and society. They say the technology is escaping oversight because agencies are too embarrassed to investigate it. Scientists want action to prevent unregulated use of such robots.
I mean, seriously.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
You want to see into somebody's bedroom, like, what they're having sex with? I mean, come on.
I mean, up till now, jerking off has been pretty much the only unregulated activity in life. So, you know,
The government, they're going
to
get into anything.
Screw yourself.
Well, even that they'll regulate if you're like in prison or something like that.
That's true.
Yeah.
Dr. Christine Hendren of Duke University told BBC News that the, quote, stakes were high. She said some robots are programmed to protest to create a rape scenario. Some are designed, but that's what they want.
That's right? A good thing. I hate to break it to people, but you don't want somebody who is into that sort of violent sexual fantasy to be doing it on like a real person. You want them to be doing it on a inanimate object that is like giving them the same experience, or even if it's a reduced experience.
Some
it's still
humans
better than,
do this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's from my understanding, this is a fantasy of some human beings.
So there's consensual.
Yeah, it's called Primal Prey.
There's a busybody group out there called CampaignAgainstSexRobots.org, and they describe themselves as a coalition of humanists, parents, women's groups, survivors, academics, and activists campaigning against commercial objectification of human beings who are concerned with the normalization of sex robots. And they have a petition where they want the government to get involved, and they want the government to conduct public consultations and develop legislation that would somehow put a stop to the promotion of sex robots.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a bunch of really ugly women who just can't get, you know, can't get and hold a guy, and so and they want to own the guy.
They don't want competition. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think it's the same group of women who's against legalization of prostitution, because there's
really
a
makes
group,
sense.
There's a group of women out there who, like you said, they're probably not that good looking.
Yep.
That don't like the idea that there would be women professionally offering sexual services in order to create a level of competition that heretofore has been illegal. Now, obviously, some people are willing to break the law to use a prostitute services, but if it were legal, probably more people would avail themselves of those services, and therefore they would less be interested in these harridans that want to lock them into an undesirable agreement or relationship. Let's talk about secession, because it's back in the news again. Looks like the folks in Eastern Oregon are ready to go.
Let's do it.
The story here from USA Today. Frustrated by liberal policies, some Oregon residents have petitioned to leave the state by moving the border with Idaho westward. The movement secured initial approval from two counties and aims to get enough signatures to put the proposal on ballots in November, according to the group called Greater Idaho. Their website, greateridaho.org. If the group succeeds, voters in Southeast Oregon may see a question on whether their county should become part of Idaho by redrawing the border. Quote, rural counties have become increasingly outraged by laws coming out of the Oregon legislature that threaten our livelihoods, industries, wallets, gun rights, and our values, said Mike McCarter, one of the chief petitioners, in a news release. He said further, quote, we tried voting those legislators out, but rural Oregon is outnumbered and our voices are now ignored. This is our last resort, he says. Now, earlier, and there's more of the story, but when I mentioned this earlier, Chris, you had criticized that this isn't really secession because they're just joining another state.
Yeah.
And it is still secession from Oregon. So that is still secession from that perspective. Yeah. But also, the thing is, and I don't know if it's different when you want to redraw state lines, with secession, you usually have to get permission from the feds. So if you wanted to secede into a 51st state or secede into your own nation, you're going to cause conflict with the feds. My questions about this is actually answered a little bit later in the USA Today story. And so apparently it will still have to go to the federal government. So why would you want to join Idaho? Why would you want to join another state when if you've just got to get federal approval? I mean, is it any more difficult to just become a 51st state?
Well, it may well be you're more likely to get federal approval if to join another state than to add a 51st state or to have a territory in the middle of the continental United States. Federal government might be very, very hesitant to do this. I think they'll be very hesitant to do this as well.
You know, yeah. It seems like the best approach to this problem of needing to get a federal approval, because the federal government, we already know, is not taking up the interests of individuals and states who want to change the boundaries, is to simply get your state, which, you know, to basically say that, we don't recognize you for within the state as being part of our state, and your laws are effectively the laws of some other state.
I say that again. Sorry.
So you can draw a line. In fact, New Hampshire already does this. Okay, there's certain laws in New Hampshire that don't apply in the southern part of the state, but they do apply in the northern part of the state.
Really?
So yeah. So effectively, the states have the power within themselves.
But they can't do anything. That's the problem here. They don't have any influence in the legislature.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.